Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Well, today we're talking about 60 stories, 60 heroes, and 60 reminders that anything is possible with one of my favorite authors, number one New York Times bestseller Brad Meltzer. We'll also hear from Adele Faber about adjusting your attitude to overcoming sibling rivalry, which, as we know, often continues into adult years. And paranormal fiction writer and ghost huntress Marley Gibson will share her story of how cheerleading saved her life following a debilitating diagnosis. And she wants us to know that we can overcome any obstacle in life with a positive attitude. But first, I want to welcome Brad Meltzer to the show. He is the new number one New York Times bestselling author of The Inner Circle, The Book of Fate, and six other bestselling thrillers. He's also the host of the TV show Brad Meltzer's Decoded on the History Channel. And Brad lives in Florida with his wife and three children. His new book is called Heroes for My Daughter. Brad Meltzer, welcome.
Thank you very much.
And I'm glad to have you back, because last time you were here, you were talking about the book Heroes for My Son. And now we're going to talk about Heroes for My Daughter. I love that you have such a diverse writing career, Brad. And you've got thrillers at number one, and that you've had thrillers on the number one New York Times bestseller. You're a nonfiction writer, a TV writer. Just give us a quick synopsis of how all that came together for you.
You know, for me, I got 24 rejection letters on my first book. That means 24 people told me to give it up, and, you know, I don't look back on the experience. And let me be clear, there were only 20 publishers. I got 24 rejection letters, which means some people were writing me twice to make sure I got the point. But I just love writing my thrillers. I love writing The Inner Circle about a, you know, it's a set in the modern day when a young archivist finds out that George Washington's secret spy ring from back during the American Revolutionary time still exists to this very day. And he doesn't know who they're working for or what they're doing. But the greatest secret of the presidency is about to be revealed. So I love scaring people and letting a thriller turn the pages quickly with things like The Inner Circle. But I also know that sometimes the best stories are the true stories. And so we get things like Heroes My Son and Heroes My Daughter. But I will say this, they all revolve around one thing. And it is my core belief, whether it's the fiction, nonfiction, TV, or otherwise in Decoded, which is simply that I believe ordinary people change the world. I don't care where you went to school or how much money you make. I believe in regular people and their ability to affect change in this world. And that's where all these books come from, is that belief.
Yeah, amazing. And I agree with you. I wholeheartedly agree with you. So you wrote Heroes for My Son after your son was born, and you wondered, you know, what kind of man is he going to be? What kind of man do I want my son to be? And why write this for your daughter? We're doing a show on sibling rivalry later, so you couldn't really not write one for your daughter after having written one for your son. But tell us why it was really important to write one for your daughter.
Of course. And, you know, for me, I started with my son and my love for my son. And I love that, right? It just comes from just wanting to make him a better man. But the truth was, 6 years ago, my daughter was born, and on that night she was born, my heart doubled in size, and I wanted to write her a book, too. I'm a writer, so I said, I'm going to write her a book that lasts her whole life, fill it full of things to make her a strong woman. And I started with Heroes, to your sibling rivalry moment, I should say that for 2 years now, since Heroes for My Son came out, my daughter's been asking one key question, which is, where's my book?
I knew it.
There's no question that it had to happen. But beyond that, I started with heroes like Sally Ride. You know, people know Sally Ride as America's first female astronaut in space. And amazing story, but why her? Why did NASA pick her? And some say it's because she was this genius at physics. Some say it was because she was this amazingly wonderful, incredible athlete. She was a tennis player. Some say it was because she just was fearless. And those are all true, but here's what also had to happen. Is Sally Ride had to see an ad in her college newspaper looking for volunteers, and she had to answer it. She had to see an opportunity, and she had to seize it. And I said, I want my daughter to learn that lesson. So I'm going to write a book for her with one-page stories, just collecting the one single great moment of a hero's life, collecting heroes like Sally Ride, like that one. It's just one page with that story. Rosa Parks, Amelia Earhart, Christopher Reeve. And that's where Heroes for My Daughter was really born, is to give her that moment of greatness in each of those people's lives.
Yeah. Now, since you're writing for your daughter, one might expect that the heroes would have all been women, but they're not. You know, you go from Audrey Hepburn to Leonardo da Vinci, Dolly Parton to Branch Rickey, Terry Meltzer, your mom, to the Dalai Lama. So how hard was it for you to narrow it down? I know it took you 6 years to put this together.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think, listen, people always say, how do you define a hero? And to me, it's like the Supreme Court definition of pornography, which is you know it when you see it. You know a
right,
hero when you
right.
see one, right? And, you know, and I love that there are famous heroes like all the ones you mentioned, you know, including my mom, because she is to me. But I love that there are heroes in here you've never heard of. There's a girl in there named Alexandra Scott, little Alex Scott. And when Alex was a year old, less than a year old, she was diagnosed with cancer. That was the only life she knew, chemotherapy and surgery and hospitals. And when she was 4 years old, she said that she wanted to open up a lemonade stand in her front yard. She didn't want to use it to buy toys for herself. She wanted to give the money to other kids, excuse me, who have cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a single day, Alex's lemonade stand raises $2,000. But here's what I love is suddenly other lemonade stands start opening up, all with Alex's name on it. And then she sets a new goal. She says, let's raise $1 million. On June 12, 2004, hundreds of lemonade stands open up in every state in the country, ordinary people selling water and sugar and lemons to help kids with cancer. Within 2 months' time, Alex dies. She's 8 years old when she dies. And before she dies, she actually set a new goal. She had set a new goal, $5 million. To this day, Alex's lemonade stand has raised over $45 million. It is still going strong.
Holy
one girl,
moly.
One idea, one big dream. That's a hero for my daughter. I had to have her in Heroes for My Daughter.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure you're asked this in every single interview, but so I'm sorry to repeat the obvious here. But, you know, we kind of think of this Three Stooges as a guy thing. I've often been told a lot of women don't get the Three Stooges.
It's my wife hates the Three Stooges.
It's a guy thing, but they're in the book here. So
yeah, you know, and I'm telling you, my wife hates the Three Stooges. She's like, why are you including the Three Stooges? And I told her this incredible story. This is a story almost nobody knows, right? I'm sure you hadn't heard it, but I hadn't heard it. And basically, back in World War II was a time when Hollywood had been asked by the government really to stop making and not make any propaganda movies about Adolf Hitler, about Germany. They just didn't want propaganda being put out there to incite people or get it too emotional. They didn't want to pick the fight with the big guy. And the truth is you know who didn't listen to that? Three guys named Moe and Larry and Curly. The Three Stooges were the very first ones to parody Adolf Hitler on film. They did it nearly 9 months before Charlie Chaplin did it in The Great Dictator, although Chaplin usually gets the credit. They did it nearly 2 years before Pearl Harbor. Think about that. Nearly two years before Pearl Harbor, these guys did it. And I said, I want my daughter to learn that lesson that you have to stand up to the bully. And the funny part was when I handed in the book, I thought that, you know, Heroes for My Son would have more male heroes and a couple female heroes. Heroes for My Daughter would have more female heroes to the exact same percentage and some male heroes as well. But when I handed in the manuscript, the funny part was is my editor came back and made one comment. And she said, we have one problem with the book. You use one word over and over again. I said, what's the word? And she said, fighter. She said, you use the word fighter in over a dozen entries. You use the word fighter in the Dalai Lama's entry. He's a pacifist, you call him a fighter. But here's what I won't apologize for is I want my daughter to learn how to fight. I want her to know that if she wants something, she should fight for it. And if she sees injustice, she should fight harder than she's ever fought before. To me, I tell her all the time, I said, don't be the princess waiting for the prince to come rescue you. You can rescue yourself.
Yeah, I love that. I love that when I read that, because we are still read these fairy stories, and so many women do wait for Prince Charming to come along and rescue them.
Yeah, and you know what? And the people in this book, they're not like that. They're self-rescuers, self-rescuing princesses, you got to call them, right?
Yep.
And one of my favorite ones in there, and yes, I love that Rosa Parks is in there. I love that Amelia Earhart's in there, but you know, my mom is in here, of course, which I love, but I also, my grandmother's in this book. You know, my grandmother, years ago, when my grandfather died, and I should tell you that the book actually, my grandmother died last year. The book, Heroes for My Daughter, was published on what would have been my grandmother's 94th birthday. And so I felt like she just had such a special place in it. And when my grandfather died years ago, And my family said, oh, my grandmother will never go on. She loved them so much. But she went on. And then when she went blind, they said she'll never go on, and she went on. And then when she went deaf, they said she'll never go on, and she went on. And I'd go see her, and I'd say, nah, how you doing? And she'd always say the same thing. She'd say, oh, I'm fine, darling. I can't complain. And I'd always think to myself, you can absolutely complain. You're blind, and you're deaf, and you're a widow. You can complain all day long. But to her, she had everything because she had her family.
Yeah.
And that, and when you think about what we all complain about on a daily basis, boy, does that put it in perspective. But I can tell you, for, you know, you and your listeners, the best hero in the book is on the last page, because the last two pages are blank. And they say your hero's photo here and your hero's story here. And I promise you, you take a picture of your mother or your grandmother or a military member of your family, and you put them in this book. You write one sentence of what they mean to you. You don't just have a good Mother's Day present. You have the single most important hero in Heroes for My Daughter. And I know for you, you know, again, when you lose your mom, for me, putting that mom in that book is a way to have it back and pass it down and let it be, you know, a great legacy for people.
Right. And I should just explain to listeners here, I lost my mom over the weekend. And as many people probably know, she was my very BFF, and it's very tough. But I loved I loved that you talked about your grandmother in the book, because that was my mother. She had so many ailments. She actually was not expected to die. She was expected to come out of hospital this week. But she had so many ailments for so many years and never complained, never complained about being in a wheelchair.
And that was my mom.
When
my mom was dying of breast cancer, just one complaint. I remember she was on her deathbed, what was truly her deathbed. And I said, Mom, how you doing? And she said, fantastic.
Yeah.
And I just thought, if you can say fantastic on your deathbed, that's a hero for my daughter, right? And you just have to take those lessons. And we all know that those, you know, we can all love, you know, Marie Curie, and we can all love Rosa Parks, and we can all love, you know, the big heroes. But there's nothing like those heroes we live with every day. And in fact, as I was researching Heroes for My Daughter, I was actually doing clothing shopping for my daughter. And all I kept seeing were princesses again. And I said, I have so many better heroes than that. So I actually went to a friend, Chris Eliopoulos, who's a well-known cartoonist. And I said, can you draw a picture of Amelia Earhart for me? And he drew a little picture of Amelia Earhart. And on the bottom, I wrote, I am Amelia Earhart. And on the back of the shirt, I wrote, I know no bounds. And I gave it to my daughter, and she loved it. And my wife said, I want one. And then we went to the estate of Amelia Earhart, and they said they loved it. So we actually launched a clothing line in tandem with this book, with the estates of Amelia Earhart, with Lucille Ball, estates of Muhammad Ali. We also have George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and Eleanor Roosevelt. And it's what I said in the beginning, it's called Ordinary People Change the World. And if you go to ordinarypeoplechangetheworld.com, you'll see these heroes. Then, and to me, it's a way of letting people put on their chest a real hero and to redefine today what it means to be a hero and who the real hero should be. And I do believe ordinary people change the world. So that's what we've launched.
Yes, absolutely. And I love Jane Goodall is one of my favorite people. I've met her a couple of times, and she is just so genuinely, she's just Jane Goodall. She's never any different.
Of course. Right? And I love that. I love that, you know, the story that we put in the book about,
yes,
Jane Goodall, who was so nice to us when we were looking to do research and helping us get photos of herself, and truly a hero to so many people.
And I was going to say, she says, you know, what you do makes a difference. You just have to decide what difference that's going to be.
Well said. Yeah, no, when we put her in the book, the story that I included is that she went out there, and at that time, no one said you should ever name a chimpanzee. You couldn't name them because they didn't want them to see human attributes. And
right.
To me, what she showed us wasn't just that you should challenge authority or that you should, you know, challenge the status quo, but she wasn't just teaching us about chimpanzees. She was teaching us about ourselves. And I love that. I love that her impact has lasted so long, that she's such an inspiration to so many people. I mean, how could I do Heroes for My Daughter and not have her in there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So do you have a favorite in this book?
My favorite is always going to be my mother. It just is. My mom, as I mentioned, died 4 years ago from breast cancer. Last week was the anniversary of her passing. And when she was alive, I remember my second book had come out. It wasn't selling well. I thought my career was over. My publisher was shutting down. It was just a mess. And I went to her and I told her how scared I was. And I said, Ma, you know, really worried about my career and all these things. And she said to me, Bradley, she said, I'd love you if you were a garbage man.
Mm.
And she wasn't taking a crack at garbage man. My uncle was a garbage man. But she was just saying, I don't care if you're the king of England or anything else. I'd love you. And to this day, every day that I sit down to write, I say those words to myself. I'd love you if you were a garbage man, just soaking in that love that my mom had for me. And, you know, for me, again, that's the best hero in the book. It has to be my mom.
Mm. And I love that you say you love your kids with such intense blind love that you swear you outshine the sun. I love that. And I want to say thank you for the advice you gave me before the show when you said to me, tell me what you said about mothers.
Sure,
never.
No, we had talked offline. I'm sorry, I didn't know that your listeners didn't know. So,
but it let just me say happened.
That, you know, when
it
you mentioned
happened.
That your mom passed, this was the best. You know, when your parents pass, inevitably, hundreds of people write you emails trying to be well-meaning, saying, you know, stay strong or hang tough or things that just truly, when you lose your parent, are horrible. You know, because I'm like, I'm not going to stay strong and I'm not going to hang tough. Don't tell me what to do. You know, you just get all upset because no one understands what you're going through at that moment. And then one friend came to me and said, I'll never forget, said, our mothers never leave us, ever. And boy, did that just tear me apart in the best way.
Yeah.
Our mothers never leave us, ever. And I said, you know, that's something that I share when I find out someone loses a parent. That, to me, is the best advice that I can share, which is the best advice I got.
Yeah.
And so I share it with you and your listeners now.
Thank you, Brad. I believe that. And I thank you so much for being with us today. The book is called Heroes for My Daughter. It's a beautiful book, and this... it's just packed full of wonderful wisdom and inspiration and Heroes for My Daughter again. And Brad, a website where people can find out more about you.
Sure. They can go to bradmeltzer.com and they can see things there. Or they can go to Ordinary, and you can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble to buy the book. But you can also go to ordinarypeoplechangetheworld.com and see some of the clothing line we did with Amelia Earhart and other heroes on it.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. You have a wonderful day.
And we're going to play you out with a song that I'm dedicating to my mother because she was truly my hero. I just don't want to listen to it, Eric, okay? Because I'll cry.
Okay, thanks, Vicki. And listen, again, don't forget my advice, please.
I won't. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Well, you were the one with all the strength. Without a name for so long, a beautiful smile to hide the pain. Did you ever know that you're my hero? And everything I would like to be.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Making a difference, one word at a time.
Spread the word. You don't have to settle for the usual talk radio. Now there's Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Well, my next guest is Marley Gibson. She's been a lifelong paranormal enthusiast, and she's the author of the hit young adult paranormal fiction series called Ghost Huntress, and there are several books in that series. She's going to talk to us primarily today about a story of how cheerleading saved her life. Her new book is called Radiate, and I'm going to bring her on, and we can learn more directly from Marley. Marley Gibson, welcome.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. And so we're talking about this book, Radiate. So this is your newest book. It's a novel, but it's based partly on your real life experience as a teenage leader who did survive cancer. And I understand you've been cancer free for about 30 years now. Is that about right?
It will be 30 years in August. Yes.
Yeah. So you were. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you found out you had cancer and how cheerleading led to helping you save your life.
Oh, sure. I was, for the most part, from literally like sixth grade, I was a trumpet player in the band. And every year, you know, went to band camp around August. And between my ninth and tenth grade years in high school, I decided I wanted to do something different. And I tried out for varsity cheerleader and made it. And I say that cheerleading saved my life because had I not been a varsity cheerleader, I would not have found the tumor in my leg as early as I did. Had I been in the band, I would not have been physically active until August. But because I was a cheerleader, we started practice like right after school ended in May. So I was very physically active.
And
found
you weren't,
the tumor
were,
in,
were you,
I'm sorry?
Were you, you, you not, were, excuse me, you were not experiencing any symptoms per se, other than you just found this tumor, is that right? Because you were active, as you said.
Yeah, I mean, I was really active. I was going to cheerleader practice every day, and I think it's because I was exercising and I was so active and running and jumping and tumbling, and I think it helped me be more aware of my body to the point where I'm like, ouch, my leg hurts, and I found the knot in it. And, you know, had I not gone to band camp until August, the cancer could have progressed and probably would have progressed even further. What happened was I was diagnosed with periosteal osteosarcoma, which is a fancy name for half malignant, half benign bone cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was around the left fibula, which is the small bone in your body, in your leg. And it was just getting to the tibia, which is your larger bone. Now, had it gotten to the tibia, I would not have a leg today. So that's why I say cheerleading saved my life because, due to being so physically fit at that point, I was very in tune with my body and I caught it.
Yeah, had you not caught that, that would have been a whole different story for you probably.
Absolutely.
So what made you wait, since you've written so many books, so many novels, what made you wait so long to write this new book called Radiate, which is based on those experiences?
Well, you know, when I went through it, I was a teenager, and at that point when you're going through something like that, I think the younger you are when you experience something that major, if you have a goal to focus on, it helps you get through it and get past it because, you know, when you're 15 years old, there's nothing bigger than getting back in that cheerleader uniform.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, exactly.
And, it's all relative, you know?
Right, exactly. And when I had cancer, there was no internet. There were no charities like there are today. There was no blogging, no tweeting. We had no support groups. It was pretty much our family and our church. And so it was never this huge deal to me. And I always kind of put it in the back of my mind. And I want to say in 2001, a friend of mine was running the Boston Marathon for Beth Israel Hospital, and they wanted to put the names of cancer victims on the front of their shirt and the names of cancer survivors on the back of their shirt. And he asked me, he said, can I put your name on my shirt? I was like, why? He says, because you're a cancer survivor. And I don't really think I ever really considered myself with that label until he asked me that. Mm. And then I realized, you know what? Yeah, I am. And then I started thinking, and that's when I, about 2001 was when I started writing. And I wasn't sure if anybody would really be interested in my story at that point. You know, I mean, it's kind of boring laying around in a hospital while somebody's trying to diagnose something.
Right.
Yeah, I needed that hook. And it wasn't until I met my husband, and like any good man, he likes cheerleaders. And he said to me, when I told him the story, he said to me, I love that cheerleading saved your life. And that's when the light went off, and I knew my hook, and I knew what I had to write and how I had to write it, and I knew that I had to get my story out
right.
to help other people, to entertain, but also to get a message out to other people.
Right, and it is entertaining. It's been called an emotional roller coaster ride. And the fact that it's based on a true story of survival only underscores that powerful message. And that I want to share that powerful message with our listeners, because this is something my mother always taught us, is that with perseverance, tenacity, and determination, you can overcome any obstacle life throws your way. Those are key ingredients, right?
I think I must channel your mother every day, because that's probably a direct quote that I tell people. When I speak to libraries in high schools and middle schools, I think I channel your mom, because I say the exact same thing. Mm. If a person, you know, when The Secret came out, it's, you know, this huge bestseller that if you have a positive attitude, you can overcome everything. And, you know, it's not a secret. It's been around for centuries, that mind over matter, and just never giving up, no matter what the situation is, whether it's cancer or an athletic injury, or if you're a teenager and you're just trying to deal with fitting in, or your parents might be getting divorced, or, you know, you didn't make the swim team, whatever that big quote-unquote challenge is in your life. You know, just even as an author, I got rejections out the wazoo, but you just don't give up. No matter what you are up against, whatever the challenge may be, you just got to keep going.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about some of your other books, too, because, I mean, you really have, you know, created a very diverse career for yourself in a way. This Ghost Huntress series, I've lost count of how many books you have in there. Is it 12?
There's five books in the series. I'm working on the sixth one right now.
Okay.
And then we also have a nonfiction how-to guide for teenagers on how to ghost hunt. So it's a companion book to that series.
So I understand your husband, Patrick Burns, is a paranormal investigator. Is that how you became involved in that side of things?
Sort of. We met that way. Yeah.
Okay.
I had actually already sold the Ghost Hunters series, and I started going to ghost hunting events for research, because I thought, if I'm going to write about this, I need to know what I'm talking about. And that's how I met Patrick. He was on a TV show on True TV called Haunting Evidence. And he also did a show on the Travel Channel last year called Paranormal Challenge. And when we met, I told him about my series, and he took me under his wing and taught me everything he knew. And he and I wrote the Other Side of Teen's Guide to Ghost Hunting and the Paranormal together as well. And now we pretty much live full-time on the road on our RV, and we go to conferences and paranormal events and shows and do book signings and lectures, and it's pretty much our life now.
Interesting. I love when people create their own unique lifestyles. And I also read that you're a certified scuba diver who got married underwater. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Patrick and I are a bit goofy, I guess, because we just can't do anything normal. we got married in Key Largo. In 25 feet of water. We're both certified scuba divers, and we got married on 11-11-11 at 11:11 a.m. in
What was the significance of that 11-11-11?
Some people say it's numerology. Some people call them angel numbers. The thought is when you see a particular number, you need to pay attention to it, because it's a message. And in numerology and in angel numbers, 11 means you need to watch your thoughts, because what you're thinking, you can manifest it. Again, going back to the positive mental attitude. So in our travels and every day of my life, I see 11s everywhere. Hmm. Exit 11. Somebody's house number is 1411. We check into a hotel, and we're in room 211. I look at the odometer in the car, and we've hit 79,411 miles. 11s are in our life everywhere. And we just thought it would be cool to get married 11, 11, 11.
Interesting. And so you're underwater. How did you exchange vows? Were you using sign language, or did you have some kind of magic headset there?
Actually, our minister was a certified scuba diver, too, and he had always wanted to do an underwater wedding. And he wrote the vows out and basically laminated them, and he would hand a card to Patrick and hold it, and I would read it, and then I would sign language to him, either I do or I will, and then I would do the same. I would read the card that he would hold, and then at the very end, the minister pulled up a big card that said, "Kiss the Bride," and we took out our regulators and kissed and put our regulators back in real quick.
Oh, interesting, interesting.
As my mother said, it was a little kooky, but, you know, that's who we are.
Right, right. So you couldn't have too many people down there with you because they had to be divers too.
Yeah, well, we had six people down with us. I had my dive maids, as I called them. And we had some people filming and taking pictures. And we had 40 people on the surface on a glass bottom boat trying to watch. But the waves were pretty wicked that day. So a lot of them were going to snorkel, and they ended up giving up because the water was so choppy.
Interesting. I love success, you know, living life on your own terms. That's how I define it.
Yeah, we're trying.
Talk to us a little bit about some of the research you did for the Ghost Huntress series, because you actually said you've got some pretty compelling pictures and videos and sound files. Tell us, what was the scariest moment for you during that research period?
Wow. I mean, it continues pretty much every weekend, because we do paranormal events almost every weekend. I've got videotape of poltergeist activity, which for your listeners, it means, translated in German, it's noisy ghost, and it's something moves, an object physically moves without anything moving it. So I have video of a ball that's moving on its own for about 18 minutes. And let's see, Patrick and I have witnessed, like, we were at a hotel one time and we watched an orange move across a dresser. That was pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've seen shadow people. I've seen a person who was there 1 minute and then not there the next minute. And we've gotten just tons of voice recordings of disembodied voices of people who are not in the room with us. So what is it? We don't really know. We cannot scientifically prove what it is we're talking to. Is it angels, demons? Is it spirits? Is it ghosts? Is it our own consciousness? Are we somehow projecting our thoughts? We really don't know, again, because to prove something scientifically like that, it has to be repeatable. And, you know, ghosts don't exactly perform on command for you. So it's most of our experiences are personal experiences and pretty much just stories we can tell people or some of the evidence we can show. But it's been a fascinating ride. And I don't know what it is, but it's definitely something.
Mm. There's so much on TV now. What do you think the fascination is with other people being drawn to that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because a lot of these shows popped up post 9/11, and they say they, you know, the they that knows everything.
Right, that they.
That they. They say that when 9/11 happened, that it changed our society in that we sort of wanted to know what was next for us in our lives. You know, what's the next step? Where do we go? Where do our loved ones go? Will we see each other? And that sort of a veil lifted. If there are dimensions, that there's a veil that lifted between the dimensions, and people became a lot more open-minded to the possibilities of the paranormal and your loved ones visiting and having connections after death. And I think that's when you saw the big boom with all the paranormal TV shows and, mm-hmm. and it just being accepted more than just talking about it in your living room and saying, oh, don't tell anybody the story, but
right.
you know, we saw Aunt Fanny's ghost in the kitchen, you know, something like that.
Right. It's been my experience over the years that some of the least likely people have the most incredible stories. So you just never know. Marley Gibson.
Oh, absolutely.
Pleasure talking with you today, Marley. I want to let listeners know where they can find out more about you.
Absolutely. My website is marleygibson.com, MarleyGibson.com. And if they want to get more information about Radiate, they can go to radiatebook.com. And you can order books from the website. It'll link you over to Barnes & Noble and Amazon. They can watch the book trailer or just send me an email and let me know their thoughts.
Excellent. And again, radiatebook.com, that's Marley's newest book. It's a novel based in part on her real-life experience as a teenage cheerleader who survived cancer, and Ghost Huntress is her other series. Marley Gibson, thanks so much for being with us today. Appreciate it.
No, thank you so much, and you have a great day.
You too. And please do stay with us. We'll be right back with Adele Faber, and we're going to talk about something that many of us face from childhood through adulthood. Please do stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
When I lived alone, is there a ghost in my house? I could sleep. When I lived alone, is there a ghost in my house?
Looking for unconditional love? An exercise buddy or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967 because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
If you want to reach a large audience of like-minded people, people with integrity, people who strive to live well and live strong, let Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair shine a spotlight on your message. Tell us about your business, product, service, or event, and we'll help you craft your message and promote your good work. Email Vicki at conversationslive.net or call 425-269-4772. That's 425-269-4772. 4772.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
If you're one of the 6 million Americans that suffer from panic disorder, tune in to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair next Monday at noon Pacific Time. In her latest book, Learning to Breathe, Priscilla Warner sets out to find her inner Tibetan monk, taking us on a winding path from panic to peace. See conversationslive.net for more information.
Panic on the streets of London.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Write it down, shout it loud. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM. Now, wasn't that fun?
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And my guest in this segment is Adele Faber, and she's written a great book called Siblings Without Rivalry, How to Help Your Children Live Together So You Can Live Too. And she wrote this with her writing partner, Elaine Maslisch. They're also the authors of How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk. And they've both written books on communication between adults and children, and those books have been translated into more than 30 languages. Adele Faber, welcome to the show today.
Well, thank you for your nice introduction. happy to be here.
Yes, pleased to have you here. And I know that you studied with child psychologist Dr. Haim Gennett. I hope I'm saying his name.
Yes, I am Gennett. That was really fascinating because as Elaine and I were in his classes and learning some basic communication skills, I mean, in my own home, I had Cain and Abel, and a lot of what he had to say was, you know, really interesting, but it really didn't go far enough, and we really needed to develop little more subtle.
and we
really had to work at it.
Well, there's an interesting story about how this book, Siblings Without Rivalry, and I want to look at, you know, how this carries on into adulthood, because I see it with many, many people, but... interesting story about how this came to be, because you were actually writing another book and this was going to be a chapter in that book, and then all of a sudden it became 100 pages long and you still weren't finished. So tell us about that.
And we tried to cut it, and every time we tried to cut it, I said to Elaine, no, we can't cut, you know, the dangers of comparisons. I mean, that's so basic. Parents do that all day long, and you can't cut that whole section on how they put their kids in roles. You're the good one. You're the mischievous one. You're the lawyer. You're the beauty. You can't cut that out. I mean, we every time we try to cut, we realize at one point we looked at each other and said, no, we're not cutting anymore. The subject is vast.
And
it's not only vast, it goes through time. You know, we read the Bible and we hear about what Cain did to Abel, and we hear about Joseph's brothers, his brethren, and how they reacted when Dad gave him a coat of many colors. Right away, burying him in the desert.
Well, I think it speaks to itself that this became a number one New York Times bestseller, Adele.
We were so amazed. I was hoping it would do well, but it just shot right up there on the charts in no time, and within a month after publication, it was amazing to us. And I said to Elaine, what is it? What have we done? And I think what interested people and made it so doable was that we just attacked that whole subject from so many different points of view. We gave storied examples. We showed the skills in cartoon form. We had before and after scenarios. We had reminder pages so that you can cut them out and put them on your refrigerator in case, you know, everything was blowing up in your face. And all of that helped. All of that helped. The times people succeeded, the times they failed.
Right.
And it's a fun book to read.
It is. It's very easy to read.
I'm getting enthusiastic about it. That's something you should be saying. I shouldn't be saying that about my own book.
Well, I've got some questions to ask you. So, you know, I pulled out some things that I was kind of surprised about, because I'm not a parent. You know, I've got 9 nephews and nieces and one sibling female, one sibling male, one brother and sister, in other words. And
you have siblings in your life. You grew up in a family.
Yes, absolutely. But this surprised me as a parent, so I want to just pull this out. If you're a parent, instead of giving equal amounts of time or equal numbers, now, this made me laugh, because when we were little, I was thinking about when we were young. Obviously, you know, with my mother passing this weekend, all kinds of memories are popping up. But we used to go to my grandmother's on Saturday mornings, because my mother ran her own business and so did my father. And so we'd go to my grandmother's house and we'd have a little routine. Bank, first of all, to put some of our pocket money in. Library to pick up our reading books for the weekend. Then we'd go get ice cream at Lion's Cafe and have a Knickerbocker Glory. And then we'd go home and my grandma would cook us chips, you know, French fries, but English chips. And there was invariably an argument between my brother and sister. Of course, I wasn't participating in this. I don't remember anyway. about who had the most chips on their plate. And you talk about this in the book. So I was like, okay, it wasn't just us when we were kids. But you say, instead of giving equal amounts, which my grandmother finally, I mean, oh my gosh, she would actually count out everybody's chips on their plate to make
sure
everybody had the right amount, equal amount. You say that's not probably a good idea. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, the kids press for equal. It's not fair. You gave them more than me. But let me go back to another little section of the book where the wife asks the husband, "Who do you love more, your mother or me?"
Mm.
And he says, "Honey, I love you both equally." Oh, he's in big trouble.
Right.
Maybe my mother, you know, it's the same thing. And he says, "Honey, you know, my mother is my mother. You are the marvelous, wonderful woman that I want to spend the rest of my life with. There's no one like you." And that's enough. That's enough to be treated as a unique human being and seen as a unique human being is enough. We don't really need equal. Now, what has that got to do with chips on the table? Your grandmother's chips. You know, you gave him more than me. And the old way was, "I did not. I gave you each 3 pancakes." "Yeah, but his are longer on this side." "Well, yours are longer on that side." "Yeah, but his are fatter. This one's thinner." There is no winning when you go down that equal, trying to make equal road. And instead, if you tune in to each child's unique needs as a unique human being, then when you hear, "You gave them more than me." "Oh, are you still hungry?" "Yeah." "How hungry?" "A little." "Well, what do you think? You want a half a pancake or a whole pancake?" "A whole." "Boy, you really are hungry. One whole pancake coming up." So in other words, I'm not going to get sucked into this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to see you as a unique, special human being.
I read that when I was reading the book that you secretly believed, and I wasn't sure if this was Adele or if this was you, Adele, or if it was Elaine writing this bit, or whether it meant whether both of you, because you both have 3 children, but you wrote, "I secretly believed that sibling rivalry was something that happened to other people's children," and,
yes,
and you felt well equipped not to have to deal with that. But is it just intrinsic in siblings to have some kind of rivalry?
It comes with the territory from the very beginning. There are sort of 2 parts of the rivalry. One is what kids bring to it at the very beginning. I'll talk about that in a second. And the other part is how we juice it up and how we don't deal so well with it. And
right.
The part that they bring to it at the very beginning is, "Oh, my goodness, you know, the loss of the fear of loss of everything that is so wonderful in the world. I mean, all of mommy, all of daddy, all the smiles, all the hugs, all the attention, everything. And suddenly there is this little intruder in their life. And mama's saying, you know, "Just a second, honey. I've got to diaper the baby. Just a second. I've got to birth the baby. I have to this, I have to that. And it's very threatening to the child. And the most typical response is, after a little while, is, "Send the baby back." "Oh, you don't mean that, honey." "Yes, I do." "No, you don't. Go on. You love your baby sister. Go on. Give her a little kiss." "What are you doing? You just bit her. Bad girl." That's not helpful. Instead, I love the conversation. The one dad reported, let's see if I can remember it. He said, "Send the baby back." It was just, that was it that triggered it. "Send the baby back." "Oh, you don't want her here anymore." "No. She cries too much." "Oh, so her crying bothers you." "Yeah. And she won't talk to me." "Oh, so you'd like her to talk to you and play with me." "Yeah." "Oh, but sometimes she holds my finger." "And you like that?" "Yeah." He said, "Seems to me, Jimmy, you have 2 feelings about that baby. Sometimes you really want her out of here, gone forever." And the kid said, "Yeah." And he said, sometimes you sort of like having her around. It's interesting. He said, yeah. And that ended it for that moment. But periodically, over the next few weeks, he would say to his father, Daddy, tell me about my two feelings. And each time he listened intently. And I thought, at this tender age, he's learning what a lot of adults don't know.
Right,
that
right.
You can have two contradictory, completely contradictory feelings existing at the same time.
Right.
And that each feeling could be legitimate and okay. And you're not crazy for feeling that way.
Yeah, and the key takeaway I took from the book is that, you know, parents do need to just really sit down and address those things because we can play into it. But I'm curious, when this carries through, when the sibling rivalry carries through to adulthood, how can we overcome some of those challenges? If you find yourself with someone who's still very competitive and you don't necessarily feel that way, how do you stop yourself from getting into that old childhood, butting heads again? Because I hear it time and time again with families, especially around holidays.
Like what? Tell me.
Well, for example, one person might, I didn't have a specific example in mind, but I know that I have one friend, for example, who says that his brother is very competitive with him. He always wants the latest Rolex, the latest car, the latest golf clubs, whatever
it is. It's painful. I've heard adults. There's a whole chapter at the end of the book about adult siblings and the kinds of things they're dealing with and the kind of pain that's involved when those relationships aren't resolved. But my focus, my big focus is on helping parents get out of that whole competitive mode. Competition is not healthy for kids.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just the simplest statement, like, who can be the first to be, to get his stuff all cleaned up in a way, you know, the first person who does this gets the prize, whatever it is. And instead, we really need to encourage them to work together. You know, hey, you know, if you want a competition, let them beat the clock. All right, here is the challenge, kids. You have 5 minutes to get the entire room cleared and all the toys put away in their right places and all the clothes put in their closets. Can it be done? And that bell rings after 5 minutes and you come in and you say, boy, you two are amazing. You are some team. And that statement, you are a terrific team. What a team. That sets up a whole different dynamic instead of who can beat whom.
Right.
You know, beat the clock, or if you want a little competition, beat your own last time. You know, how long did it take you to run down that hill instead of against your brother? You know, what's your best time? And, oh, you beat your own time. That's great.
Right. Yeah, I have one friend who I always remember her telling me this and thinking how sad it was because somebody said to her, gosh, you have really beautiful eyes. And she did not believe it. And she really does have stunning green eyes. But her father would always tell her sister that her sister had beautiful eyes. And so she internalized that to say that she did not have pretty eyes, period. And even as an adult, still can't accept it.
Terrible.
Strange.
Mm. It is terrible. I mean, it's painful and unnecessary. Well, I just remember, you know, doing a tour, a publicity tour, the first time the siblings was published. And the woman who took us around was just so amazing,
right,
and delightful and spirited and charming. And I couldn't help but, you know, comment on how much I enjoyed her. And she said, oh, yeah, well. And I said, what? She said, well, you should meet my sister. I'm nothing compared to her. And I thought, she's living, and this remarkable woman is still living in the shadow of her sister because of any number of reasons.
Right,
because
it happens.
Parents valued the other sister more.
Right.
And I have a whole section on favoritism.
Right. So we've got to run right now, Adele Faber. We are right at the end of our segment, but this is a really great book. It was number one New York Times bestseller, Siblings Without Rivalry. Do you have a website real quick, Adele?
Sure. Faber Maislisch, just all do it as one word, FABERMAZLISH, workshops.com.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for being with us, Adele. I really appreciate it. And the book
My pleasure.
The book again is called Siblings Without Rivalry. And we're right at the end of our segment now, so we're going to leave you. We're going to play out a little song from my mom. And I'm actually going to be traveling, as you can imagine, over the next couple of weeks. But we will be checking in here once a week. So don't forget us. We'll see you next Monday. Until then, live well, live strong.